Hey there. I was a bit slightly unprepared. Super happy to have you back here. And we have, I believe, like five or six comments and two Facebook messages that we're going to go over today. No emails this week, which is, I don't know what to say. I just remarked on that. Cool. So let's jump right in here and start chronologically with the first emails I wanted to talk, comments, sorry, I want to talk about, which was from 3 days ago, I believe from Friday. And as always, nothing here is medical advice to anyone, just my general thoughts and comments and general advice that I hope will help anyone that's tuning in. And firstly, just a short one here. It is from, on episode number 52, jerky body movements. It's a talk about that. 2 months ago, Global Watch commented, "Mine are so bad that I can't fall asleep. Happens all night." And let's see, what did I say about that? I asked about it was a long-term problem or a more. Or yeah, just to let me know if you can help answer any questions. And then I was back talking to Global Watch here, and I heard, and Global Watch said, my jerky movements have gone completely gone from being like, mine are so bad I can't fall asleep, happens all night. And I thought that was really encouraging. And as always, I try to bring up positive things, things that are encouraging. And I feel like, this is just one single comment from one person, but I feel like this goes along with my general observation with these, like when you fall asleep, you have a really jerky body movement. They're really scary, very upsetting, and they act, I feel like they are kind of a little micro version of insomnia itself, meaning the more attention we give them, the more we think about them, try to figure out why they're happening, et cetera, the stronger they get. But the positive thing I feel generally about these jerky movements are that they typically don't last that long. And I believe that is because there's kind of no way to avoid them, meaning at some point you're going to have to go to bed. And then if you're having all these jerky leg movements as you're, or body movements as you're falling asleep, then they're going to happen. And what's going to happen, like if there was a way to avoid them, they could be kind of like suppressed, or you could believe that, well, I did this, that's why I didn't have these jerky body movements, and I think I got it under control. And you could kind of suppress them, but which means that you never actually get completely past them. You think you're controlling them, but you don't. But in the fact that that's impossible makes you have to kind of like face them in a way. And I believe that what happens is that as you cannot avoid them, you have to go through it every single night. Then after a while, you notice that, oh, I had less of them. Interesting. You feel like maybe it's not so bad, or you kind of get like they don't affect you anymore. So you're kind of forced to deal with them in a way. And I think that's why they don't become chronic. I've come across somebody who's had it for like, more than a year. I have had somebody, no, actually, no, that's a lie. No, I have not. I've only come across people who've had it for like a month, like Global Watch. When I said a year, I thought about another thing, which is those rushes of energy that those people can have longer. But that's a little bit of a reflection on these jerky movements. And as I'm reading this very, very good book here, which I don't recommend as for like self-coaching. It's very, very dense in a way. It's super great, super smart author, but very academic, hard to get through. But what I'm learning a lot about is like avoidance, that when you try to avoid something, then you can get the impression that the thing you were trying to avoid didn't happen because you were doing something to avoid it, rather than that, it wasn't going to happen anyway. So avoidance can be a real problem. And I feel like we can't avoid these jerky body movements. And that's probably why they tend to go away in not so much time. So a little bit of a reflection there, but overall, just a positive, encouraging, note there that Global Watch body movements have completely gone away. Good for you. Awesome. Very happy to hear that. Now, here is a comment on Insomnia Insight number 21, bedtime restriction follow-up number 2. It's from Dale Fixter. Let's read it. "Hi, Daniel. My sleep is 4 hours. Then I wake up and I'm unable to return to sleep. I'm at the end of week two of sleep restriction, consistent 6.5 hours. I think that means consistent 6.5 hours in bed, no naps, thus far no improvement. At bedtime, I'm extremely tired and I struggle to stay awake. Literally, my head is constantly dropping. It's been like this for 3 years. Oh my gosh, that's a long time. No stress or anything bothering me. I feel good enough to function, say, once per week, but that's it. Prior to insomnia, I slept well enough to consistently feel good. I believe I've always woken once for toilet, but always returned to sleep. I've tried CBTI once before, but unfortunately, I gave myself tinnitus through a combination of health anxiety and sleep restriction. My ears popped. Since anxiety has returned to normal levels and I learned some valuable lessons, I've done a grade one sleep lab 2 years ago and no issues were found. I am unsure how to continue with the restriction. How long before you can say for sure this is effective or not for a person? I'm not sure if further reducing the time in bed will be valuable with my type of insomnia. Also, I have concerns about my ability to stay awake longer. I never have any issues with initial sleep onset, and the restriction doesn't seem to aid the second sleep onset after I've woken. I'm not doing stimulus control. I stay in bed relaxed. I have no particular rumination thoughts. Your advice would be much appreciated. Absolutely. And you know, as I read that last line, you appreciate would be much appreciated. I was like, did I answer to this? But I'm pretty sure I didn't, because I say here in my comment that I'm going to reply on Monday, and I'm so everything else. So Dale, first of all, thank you for this comment, and to everyone else that is commenting, sending me emails and messages, etc. I really, really appreciate. I'm super grateful for the opportunity to talk about these things, and I hope you find it helpful and valuable, of course. Now, couple of things. Actually, there's a lot to talk about here. One is I thought about this as I was reading. I struggle to stay awake, and you said here, Dale, I've always woken. Let's just go for the end here. I'm worried about my ability to return to sleep, and it says here that I'm unable to return to sleep. And now, this may seem like semantics, but there's some important things to talk about here, and which is the following: you often hear people that have trouble sleeping say, I can't sleep, or I'm unable to go to bed, or the opposite, that I was successful in sleeping 6 hours, or I managed to get 6 hours. This wording implies that one is thinking of sleep as a skill or ability, that one person that is sleeping well has that ability, they can sleep. Versus somebody who struggles, they have lost the ability, or they cannot sleep. But in fact, sleep is not a skill or an ability. It is something that happens without any effort. In fact, any effort to make it happen will make you sleep less. And the reason some people sleep really well is that it's not that they can do that, it's that they're exerting no effort. They're not trying at all. They're not questioning it. They have no thoughts about it whatsoever. So it's always good to keep that in mind, that it's not something you can or cannot do. It's not an ability. It's something that happens to you when you're sufficiently sleepy, and you don't have any hyper arousal that's blocking that from happening. I do these hand gestures is because I've lately been talking a lot about like the sleep drive, or need to sleep as the gas that makes us want to sleep. Or makes us sleep rather, and the break as the kind of hyper arousal when we have kind of stress, worry, excitement, things like that block us from sleeping. So sleep is not a skill or an ability, and that's always good to keep that in mind. In fact, I've thought about it myself, because I make the quote unquote mistake myself of saying, like, if you can't sleep. I'm really going to be mindful going forward to say, like, if you don't sleep, instead, try not to imply that it is a skill or something you can control. So talked about that. And then, and secondly, I want to say, I think it's great that you're trying there. Like a lot of people don't even get to the point of having done spending less time in bed for 2 weeks. That's really good. And I want to say a word of encouragement here is, out of all the people that I've interacted with, whether in clinic or on this YouTube channel, or now that I started coaching on my app, Bedtime with a Y. If you have an iPhone, check it out. If you have an Android, it's coming. But of all the people that I've interacted with, everyone that has like continued the path, stuck with the program, et cetera, have gone on to do well. Either going to a place where they sleep really well, or to a place where they're not worried about sleep and not bothered by not sleeping not well, and not have you know living a happy life and not being affected by sleep at all. So I hope you find that encouraging, and I really believe that what we call CBTI, or a combination of education and behavior changes, really is almost like weight loss for is almost like a diet and exercise for weight loss. Like, if you stick with it, move forward with it, it does work. Now, we talked about that. A couple of things. Sorry to hear about the tinnitus that made that first CBT experience very difficult, but I'm happy that your anxiety has returned to normal levels. That's really good. And nothing was found in sleep lab. That's good too. Now, how long before you can say for sure if this is effective or not for a person? Now, yeah, that's kind of what I was talking about before. I believe it is 100% effective. I believe that one thing that can make CBTI or any other like a combination of education plus behavior change like CBTI not successful is kind of like, or let me put it this way. The more one wonders if it's going to work for me, or when is it going to help me, or when am I going to get to a point where I sleep good again, the more you ask yourself that, the longer it will take. But if you stick with the program and just keep going, you will get better. In my mind, there's no question about it. And so, yeah, the questioning of is this effective for me, is it going to work for me or not, is one of the things that will keep you from getting good sleep sooner. And now that the question is completely understandable and logical that you question something that takes a lot of effort. It's kind of like a lot of the problem solving we do as humans is trial and error. And generally that's a great strategy, because if something's not working, it benefits us to abandon that attempt, because the sooner we abandon something that doesn't work, the sooner we can ultimately solve the problem. But when it comes to sleep, it's like you just keep going. And I want to say that 2 weeks into doing CBTI, a good amount of people, I would say probably 50% or something like that, do start noticing some improvement. But a lot of people can take 5-6 weeks before you notice really any benefit. And now, another important thing here is, when you do notice something, even the tiniest thing that you notice, like, you know what, I did fall asleep a little sooner there, or I fell back asleep a little sooner that time, really hold on to that. Really play that up and really, focus on that, because those become stepping stones. You know, you're starting to believe, you're starting to see that this works. That gives you more confidence. You keep going and you just build up sleep confidence and you get better and better. So hold on to those early positive signs there. And here's another one, important one. I'm not sure if further reducing the time in bed will be valuable with my type of insomnia. Now, everyone who has trouble sleeping or insomnia has a unique story. All human beings are unique. But insomnia is not unique. Like, it's the same. It's the same for everyone. There aren't really any specific types of insomnia. They're all, in my opinion, caused by hyperarousal, and you know they can present differently. They can, but at the root of it, it's all the same, and that's so important. It is so important to think of your insomnia as ordinary, the same as everybody else's has. To give you another example of, you know, to illustrate my thinking here, from the inside perspective, from somebody who's starting to have trouble sleeping, it very often appears like bizarre, strange, why this is happening to me, like, etc. But for somebody like myself, who takes care of a lot of people with trouble sleeping, you never hear anything that's unique or strange or unusual. It's the same story with kind of little modifications all the time. And it's so important, I believe, to think of your insomnia as ordinary, typical, you know, just there's nothing special to it. Because when you believe that your insomnia is different, even just a little bit different from what other people have, then you're going to be looking for a treatment that is different, that is unique to yours, that is specifically kind of tailored to your insomnia. And that just leads down to that kind of rabbit hole of looking for things, and that this doesn't work, this maybe worked, this didn't work, et cetera, et cetera. Versus thinking of like, you know what, my insomnia is pretty typical, is similar to what other people have. Therefore, if I just stick with this program, then I'm also going to do better. That takes you a long way towards sleeping better for sure. So we talked about that. I hear the sleep restriction doesn't seem to help with the second sleep onset after awoken. I hear it. And I'm not doing stimulus control, etc. So I want to say that the fact that you're not falling back asleep sooner, it's probably just a matter of time. If you keep getting up consistently the same time every morning and you go to bed not before 6.5 hours before that, then I bet just with time you're going to see improvement. If you've gone like maybe 3 weeks or something like that and you haven't seen any improvement, then maybe it is a good idea to spend a little less time in bed, go down to like 6 hours. And I say that because most human beings actually sleep around 6 hours and 15 minutes on average, which means that if somebody spends 6.5 hours in bed, that may not actually be any bedtime restriction. You may be spending more time in bed than you need to sleep, you know, theoretically at least. I don't have any particular ruminating thoughts. That is awesome. That's amazing. That's great. Now, there is a lot of people, though, that feel like they're not stressed, not anxious. Things are going pretty well, but just are not sleeping very much. And that can seem really bizarre as well. I feel like it is hyperarousal in those cases that is at play, meaning you're not obviously worried or stressed, but there's a little bit of kind of preoccupation that is going on. And, the mere fact of knowing that one, kind of monitoring your, the mere fact that you're writing this comment or you're thinking about your sleep, et cetera, it to me signals that there is a little bit, at least, of preoccupation, which is, could be hyperarousal, which could then lead to not sleeping as much as you would if you didn't have that hyperarousal, if it doesn't feel like you're particularly stressed. So I guess in summary here, things that are always good is just like when you decided upon a sleep window, like how much time you're going to spend in bed, don't question it. Just keep moving forward and set it and forget it, you know, set that sleep window and then forget about anything else regarding sleep. That is like, just focus on being happy, doing things that you enjoy and just let sleep happen. One more thing, which I feel like I have to really remind everyone of, is like clock watching is not good. Try to not know what time it is from the time you go to bed and on. It's good to have an alarm, I think, in the morning, so make sure you don't stay in bed beyond your wake-up time. But other than that, try to be timeless. Try to not know what time it is. Dale, I hope this is helpful, and please leave another comment or email me if you have follow-up questions or any new questions, of course. Now, Let's check this out. So on Insomnia Insight number 146, there is a comment from one day ago from Sodas32. Just a question. I'm wondering if anyone else has experienced this. So anybody else has experienced what we're going to talk about here, please answer Sodas on episode 146 here. When I do get, say, 4 to 5 nights of 5+ hours sleep, sometimes longer, I tend to feel more agitated throughout the day. I never have refreshed feeling after getting adequate hours. It's almost like when I can actually sleep, I need more and more on that day. I've been struggling with sleep issues for over a year now. Firstly, sorry to hear that you've struggled for sleep issues for over a year. Happy you found my channel though. And thank you for writing this comment. I pondered this a bit throughout the day, and I believe that the most likely way one can explain this is the following, that we just talked a little bit about hyperarousal. Hyperarousal is when you're either frankly stressed and anxious or worried, or you are stressed, but as a like subclinical level, you don't even notice it, but somewhere in your mind, you're kind of preoccupied, right? And that it really drives insomnia. That's the reason we have insomnia. Now, what is very common is that people describe that they've been on a CBTI program or other program for, let's say, a couple of weeks or something like that. And they say, you know what? I am sleeping better. I'm sleeping pretty good, in fact, but I'm still really tired. And what I tell people like that is, you know, that's common, expected. And what happens is, when that hyperarousal, when that kind of, you know, your mind is kind of turbo mode, running really fast, when that starts to go away, when you start becoming less worried about sleep, less anxious about sleep, you think less about sleep, etc., then that hyperarousal that has masked how fatigued you were starts going away. Then you truly feel how tired you really have been, and I think that could be at play here. Meaning, from your perspective, it's like weird because when you finally for several days are sleeping more, you don't feel any better. It's like you actually feel like you just need more sleep. And I think one way to explain it is that what is happening is that for some reason, that hyperarousal is better. It's going down and you're actually sleeping more. But the fact that when the hyperarousal goes down, you're experiencing a lot of emotion that hyperarousal was masking. So I think that could be why this kind of phenomenon has been going on. That said, a kind of natural follow-up question from you would be like, okay, well, if that's the case, what should I be doing? Well, I think same thing as I always say, like don't spend too much time in bed. And apart from that, get up same time every morning. And apart from that, try not to research sleep. I believe that, like, if as long as you're watching my videos here and following my channel, and you feel like you're learning things and it's meaningful and helpful, then please go on. And if you have other sources of like good information about sleep, that's good. But definitely, once you reach the point where you feel like, okay, I understand what's going on, I see what I need to do, then it's time to really go on like sleep detox mode and like keep that sleep window. But other than that, just don't read about sleep. Don't research it. Don't Google it. Don't talk to people. Just, you know, take your focus elsewhere as much as you can. I think that is really, really the way to go. Sodas, thank you so much. And I wanted to say that I'm really happy Jules, who seem to be like really, really tired over the past few weeks here, and said in a comment to Insomnia, said 269, "Hi Dan, I'm sleeping a lot better." That is awesome. I'm really, really happy. Now, one day ago, we have here a comment on Insomnia Insight number 264 from, I'm going to say just Derek. And let's read it. "Dear Daniel, I've commented before on one of your videos about SFI. In the last month, I actually got better in regards to my sleep. That was until the past 2 months. Since these 2 months, me and my family have had some problems which affect us all. I have to say it really affected my mood and still does. I'm sad, a bit frustrated because of what we've been through. I'm again having problems with my sleep. This time it's weirder. When I start to fall asleep, just right before entering sleep, I get weird feelings in my head and weird thoughts, and I wake up just like that. And then this gets repeated over and over. And after 1 hour, I take 3 milligrams of oxazepam and can manage to sleep. Sometimes I take 3 milligrams of Zopiclone. It helps too. I do not take medications regularly. It was prescribed to my brother for helping him with sleep, but he did not need it and did not take any medication. That's good for him. So I sometimes take it from his medications. I'm starting to think about SFI again, although it has been 5 months since my first thought about it. How can and what can I do now? Sometimes I feel that I forgot how to sleep. Can you help me with this? I can certainly share a lot with you that I hope will be helpful. Firstly, as I think you're probably going to hear me talk more and more about this, is like you say here, I can manage to sleep, which again, like, indicates a belief that sleep can be managed, which it cannot. Only kind of your body, when it needs to sleep, can make you sleep. So only your body can produce sleep. Our body can also block sleep when we're kind of stressed, anxious, worried, preoccupied. And that's where, you know, medications can sedate us and reduce some of that hyperarousal and then allow our body to sleep, but they cannot produce sleep, and sleep cannot be controlled, managed. It cannot be, it's not an ability. So always good to keep that in mind. Now, firstly, for those people unfamiliar with SFI, I'm very conflicted talking about it at all. It's this extremely rare condition that is really a, should never have become an insomnia, in my opinion. But, you know, if you had trouble sleeping 5 months ago, thought about this condition, and then slept better, well, in my knowledge of this, that is definite proof that it's not SFI, because it never gets better. It just gets worse and worse. Just a little comment on that. And now, I think this is important. You, Derek, you slept better for a good amount of time, which is fantastic. And that should, we should really focus on that. Like, you know, of course we're not going to do that, because I want to try to give you something that is helpful and can help you move forward. But in a way, we could have just spent a couple of more minutes there just saying, like, that's fantastic, that's great, it's amazing that you slept better, because that is so important. It's so important to focus on good things, and that proves too, like, the fact that you're sleeping better, that proves that you can sleep. There's no broken sleep switch. There's no hormonal imbalance. There's no weird neurotransmitter abnormality or something like that. You can sleep. And that's important. Secondly, you know, I feel very encouraging that you're bringing up here that a lot of things have happened to you and your family, meaning that, of course, I'm not happy about that. Of course not. But the fact that you do make that connection, that the thing that has happened to your family and has affected your mood, is probably why you can't sleep. You know, it may seem like this is not that important, but it is very important. It shows us that you have insight, and you know that these things that are happening to me are probably why I can't sleep too, and which then makes it much more that's really demystifying this. And we can even go as far as to say as that's normal, meaning when something stressful happens to us, we're supposed to sleep less. You know, if somebody lost their job and then said, and then I slept great, that's a weird, you know, it's natural and actually very sound reaction that when things are kind of shaky and unstable and uncertain, we're supposed to sleep less. Think about it, like when we lived in caves hundreds of years ago. Maybe we actually didn't live in caves. Maybe that shows how ignorant I am, but you know what I'm talking about, like we lived out in the wild. And there was some, like, okay, there's some warring tribe in the neighborhood. You know, we're supposed to sleep less, be on the alert. That makes perfect sense. So that reaction itself is normal. Now, here's the thing, like somebody like yourself, Derek, that has had a bout of insomnia, when something stressful happens later on, and that then causes one to sleep less, then it's like it's easy to kind of re-trigger that insomnia. It's like, oh, I have insomnia again, or this is going to happen again, and oh my gosh, I can't sleep, and then it becomes a self-fulfilling thing. But it's important to note that the root, the kind of primary thing here, something happens in your family's life, now you're not sleeping. That is normal, but the reaction to it may be a little bit exaggerated for various reasons, but maybe one because you had trouble sleeping in the past. Now, that said, it's interesting. We talked about, you know, Global Watch and these jerky movements that happen when we're about to fall asleep. And the reason they do is because when we're about to fall asleep, our mind, you know, our brain transitions from wakefulness to sleep. And in that transition, bizarre things can happen. Like, you know, part of the brain is asleep while part of the brain is awake, and then you have a jerk, you know. And there are many other things. Exploding head syndrome is one of them, where, you know, you're about to fall asleep and then you hear this loud boom in your head. It's not real. It's just like a product of your of that mind that's in the brain that's in transition from one sleep stage to another. Hallucinations can happen too. You can be like, you're about to fall asleep and then you hear voices, and then you're like, what was that? And it was nothing, you know. A lot of bizarre things can happen in the transition from wakefulness to sleep. Sleep paralysis is another one, when you wake up and your body's still paralyzed. I feel I forget a couple, but there are a lot of them. And now, and here we go, like, just right before entering sleep, I get this weird feeling in my head, weird thoughts, and I wake up just like that, and then it repeats over and over. That sounds very similar to those hypnic jerks we talk about, that they happen as we're about to sleep, and then you wake up, and then it happens again and again and again and again. And with those hypnic jerks, my opinion is definitely that it happens repetitive times because of the attention to them. Like, it happened once, then you're like, oh no, I hope it doesn't happen again. And then we kind of tense, and we're like, and then it happens again. And it sounds like what's happening here could be, again, not medical advice, just me like sharing thoughts that come up when I read this, is this could also be some type of transitional sleep event, weird feelings, weird thoughts, just so they're about to sleep. And then, and that the fact that you're having these weird thoughts is kind of alerting and alarming in a way. And then you wake up, and then because of your focus on these weird thoughts, or for some odd reason, they happen again, you know, and again and again. And for those hypnic jerks, I definitely believe that the best thing to do is try to pay, you know, it's hard to do, but try not to figure out why they're happening. Try not to overplay them, and try to see that nothing, they're benign, like they've never been shown to cause any health consequences. And I think that applies to any sleep transitional events. Now, you mentioned here you're taking some medications, and medications could, I see how they could work in this scenario, because it is the, in fact, interestingly, the fact that these medications have helped in a way is a testament to the fact that the events are kind of hyper arousal related, meaning the fact that what medications do, we've talked about many, many times here on this channel, is that they cannot not produce sleep, but they can be kind of sedating. And the fact that they help in a way is proof that once you kind of take your mind off these weird thoughts, once you're not thinking about it, they don't happen as much, you know? So I hope this, you know, was helpful, Derek, and I have a little bit more to talk about. But my general thought on medications is that the problem with medications is that they can create a belief that you need them for sleep, and that can be really hard to get around that belief. I think that's generally like the problem with them, that they can hurt your sleep confidence and your belief that you can sleep by yourself. That's usually the problem with medications. Now, how can and what can I do now? Sometimes I feel that I forgot how to sleep. That feeling is very common, and we cannot lose the ability to sleep. It cannot happen. So I will say this. not very original and not something you've probably heard me say in the past, but I think it's actually very important that I repeat myself all the time, because it kind of shows how insomnia is the same for everyone. Meaning what you should do is always the same. I believe it's, you should get up at the same time. You should spend maybe 6.5 hours in bed. Don't go to bed too early. You should try to shift attention away from sleep. You should try to just be happy and do things that you enjoy, and just keep going. Just keep going with that. Keep going with that. If it seems like this is not working, don't question it. Just keep going. And I think that's really the way. I think that's really the way. Well, Derek, I hope this was helpful to you, and thanks for engaging and commenting. I am super appreciative of that. And now we have two comments, or two messages rather, that we should go over here. And here is one from Dawn. So Dawn, when did I last hear from Dawn? August 20. So, August 20. So how long ago is that? So August, September, October, November, like about 3 months ago. And Dawn really made a lot of improvement very quickly, which is really, really cool. Now, follow-up question here. Hi, Daniel. Thanks for all your prior help. The main area I keep running into trouble with is noise sensitivity at night. If I hear a door close or similar inconsistent sounds, I get a massive sympathetic response waking me up, and then I have a very hard time falling back to sleep, even if I'm very tired. I would love to get over this pathological response, and any help would be greatly appreciated. Sincerely, Dawn. Thank you, Dawn. This is a really good question, a really important one, and a common one. Now, here's the thing. We are often led to believe, or we kind of create that belief ourselves, that that waking up is a problem. You know, I keep waking up. And the thing with that is that the waking up part is actually not a problem. Waking up multiple times is completely normal. I do the, you know, quote unquote normal, because, you know, what is really normal? Like, that could be anything. Like, what's normal for a 5-year-old is not the same as for an 80-year-old, and blah, blah, blah. But I'm drifting off. Sorry about that. But, and I also think it's not good to think too much about what's normal, what's not normal. But that said, it is, let me phrase it this way. It's very, it's typical, and it happens to everyone, that we wake up multiple times. When you do a sleep study on somebody, you see that people wake up at least 10 to 12 times per night, often more, and don't remember that at all. And that's how most people with no trouble sleeping do wake up multiple times. If you put it like a video camera on somebody that sleeps great, you would see that they do wake up, they turn around, they, you know, things like that many times, but they don't remember it because they go back to sleep again. So the waking up part is actually not a problem. It's, the problem is in not falling back asleep, and which then leads us to the culprit. So Dawn here is identifying like a door or similar like inconsistent sound gives a massive sympathetic response. The important point here, I believe, is not to think of this as a noise sensitivity issue, in fact, or think of it as it's, or a noise issue. Rather, it is, and actually, this is very well, extremely well put here, it's a massive sympathetic response. So the problem is not the sound. The problem is not that the sound wakes you up. The problem is the reaction to waking up. It's very similar to light, for example. Some people say, if I just see the tiny little bit of light, then I'm wide awake. Well, but the same, I had a patient like that actually the other day, that told me that, but then also said that sometimes she would sleep into like 2 p.m. or something like that. And I said, well, isn't it pretty light then at 10 a.m.? And she was like, that's right. And so I was like, so how is it that that light doesn't make you wide awake those times? And she was like, oh, that's a good point. And so same thing there. It's not the light itself that is a problem. It's the reaction to that. Oh, no, I saw the light. Oh, no, I'm not. I know it. I saw the light. The light hit my retina. Now I'm going to be up. And then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so it is the reaction to it. This what you describe as a massive sympathetic response. That is the quote-unquote problem. So how do you address this? How do you get over this pathological response? Well, there are two ways that I can think of immediately. There's the gas and the brake problem, if you will. So the gas problem is if you don't have enough gas, if you're not sleepy enough, then you're not going to fall back asleep. And I think you did say that I am very tired. That, you know, but you could still use the gas to try to overpower this, meaning you do classical bedtime restriction, you spend less time in bed. And then with time, typically you continue waking up, but you fall back asleep quicker. And the key there becomes to recognize that. So let's say you decide, you know what, I'm going to spend less time in bed, probably again, because I think you did it in the past, but let's say you said, I'm going to spend less time in bed. And then the first time you wake up because of a noise and fall back asleep pretty quickly, then you play that up and you'd be like, there it is. I've proven that the problem is not waking up because of the noise, and I've proven that I can fall back asleep even if I'm waking up by noise. And then little by little, you get less, you react less to that. So that's kind of the gas way of doing it. And then, so what happens is that is you work on the gas, like you're kind of producing more sleep drive. When you see that it works, then the brake goes away, you know? So actually working on the gas helps with the brake too. And then the other, so number two I thought about was like, you can focus on the brake part, just kind of like trying to reduce this reaction. And how could you do that? Well, it actually becomes kind of similar. It becomes looking for evidence. It becomes finding by either moving forward and kind of keeping track or looking back, just kind of like by recall, looking back and saying, have I ever fallen back asleep pretty quickly after being woken up by a sound? And if you can find even just one single time when that happened, then that is the evidence you're looking for. That is the evidence that proves that the sound is not the problem. And when you find that evidence, what can happen is you wake up because of an inconsistent noise, and then you're like, well, I know now that that is not a problem. I know that I can fall back asleep because that's happened before. And then that reduces that response. So those are two things. And the third one I actually thought about is like when it's just a classical of the, what I always talk about is like, if you wake up for any reason, and you feel like kind of hyper aroused, high sympathetic gear, like you can't fall. You're not there. I go again. I said, I can't. You don't, I should say, you don't fall back asleep, or you feel like you're not going to fall back asleep for a while, then you could also just read a book, listen to a podcast, do something you enjoy, and then that takes your mind off thinking about the fact that you're awake, and that could really help as well. Because when you get to point, here's something interesting, I think helpful that came to my mind. When you're no longer afraid of waking up, when you actually don't mind it at all, because you know you, that's kind of an opportunity to read this book that you enjoy. When you're not afraid of waking up, then you do it much less too. That's enough. So maybe three things there. Cool. Dawn, hope this is helpful. And with that said, and again, please, any follow-up questions, please let me know. And then there was one more. How can I get to that? Let's see if I can get it here. Here, maybe? Yeah, there it is. This is from Jay. Jay has contributed a lot. Thanks so much for all the questions, Jay. And let's read it. This is what came in Sunday. Hi, Daniel. I just watched a recent video on the big one. I'm going through another big one. I still think I have SFI. I'm debating if I should go get sleeping pills. The first time I reached out to you about 4 months ago, I went 11 days without a wink of sleep. Please get back to me. I'm doing my best not to worry. And then, hi, Daniel. I was wondering, when you say spend less time in bed, do you think it's okay to watch TV, Netflix in your room? I'm not trying to sleep if I'm not tired, but what about if you're just sitting in bed watching TV? Can that be a problem? Definitely want to talk about both these things. And firstly, for those of you who didn't watch that or listen to it, if you're listening to a podcast, the episode on the big one, I called it, I find that a lot of people with insomnia have a fear of like that first episode where they have insomnia, being afraid of that coming back. And Jay, you described that to a T here. Months ago, I went 11 days without a wink of sleep. For you, that's the big one. That's, I think that's what you're saying, and it sounds like it. That sounds like that's the big one for you, the one like that first really long sleep of literally no sleep. That's the one you're afraid of is going to come back. And the point I made in that episode, the big one, was that it is the fear. It is the fear of that big one coming back that kind of fuels insomnia and can fuel it for a long time. And now I'm reading, you know, another way of explaining or putting this, which I'm reading a lot more about in this book that I showed before, is that it's actually the avoidance, kind of the efforts to avoid the big one or avoid sleeplessness that really fuels it. Because when you're taking steps to try to avoid losing sleep, you're actually giving it attention. You're actually thinking about sleep. You're actually feeding it in a way. And more importantly, when you are doing things to try to avoid losing sleep and you end up sleeping like okay or a little bit, then you can easily start believing that it is the things that you're doing to avoid sleeplessness that is keeping you from experiencing the big one again, when in fact it is the fear of the big one coming back that is keeping you from complete recovery. You know, hope this makes sense. I haven't come up with yet a really good word of wording this, but again, trying to avoid sleep loss really, I believe, keeps you from really getting well. Now, the question here is I'm debating if I should go get sleeping pills. You know, my thought on this is that if somebody was to kind of start getting worried that, you know, I didn't sleep at all for several days a couple of months ago, and now I'm really worried that this will happen again, let me try to get some sleeping pills. And let's say this person starts taking those sleeping pills, then, oh, hey, let me read this. This is a perfect example of something I just managed to pick it up here. All right, page, check this out. Here it says, what is this talking? This is talking about coping behaviors, such as avoidance, exactly what I'm talking about. It can be a problem. For example, the non-occurrence of a catastrophe, such as suffering a mental breakdown, can be attributed to avoiding stress rather than to the fact that the belief about stress causing a breakdown is faulty. And so so how do we translate this to what we're just talking about? Well, it's like if you're starting to take a medication for sleep and the non-occurrence of a catastrophe, let's say you start taking medications for sleep and then you don't have another stretch of 11 days where you don't sleep at all, that can lead you to believe that it was because you took the medications that didn't happen. when there's actually no evidence whatsoever of that. But that belief can harm you in the long run because it can make you feel like, okay, now I'm taking this medication and that the big one didn't come back. Well, therefore, I need to keep taking this medication for that big one not to come back. So you're actually not in a better spot in that scenario. You're in the same spot you are in now, except that your belief has been, like, and your sleep confidence has been hurt. Your belief system has been changed. And you start believing that I need to take this medication to avoid the big one. So again, it's all about like trying to avoid something, trying to avoid sleeplessness creates a lot of problems. And the opposite of that, you know, if you don't look for like an outside thing to help your, if you're not trying to avoid sleeplessness and you get another episode where you sleep very little, but you again kind of like don't react to it, don't change anything, spend little time in bed, just shift your mind elsewhere, and then things get better, then you have proven that, you know, sleep comes back even without any external thing going on, even without changing anything. Sleep comes back, and it's like, that can really grow your sleep confidence, really grow your confidence in your own sleep. You know, had this been like a couple of days ago, I would have said this can really grow your confidence in your own ability to sleep. I'm really going to try to avoid that. It's interesting. I'm really seeing how I myself am using a lot of language that implies that sleep is a skill. I'm really going to try to avoid that. Cool. And then the second part here. Hi, Dan. I was wondering, when you say spend less time in bed, do you think it's okay to watch TV, Netflix in your room in mouse trying to sleep? I think actually this goes segues also nicely to what we just talked about. Like when you're asking about like, is it okay to watch TV, Netflix in your room? The question in a way is like, if I watch TV, Netflix in my room, could that be a problem? Could that lead to me having less sleep? And so if you then decide not to watch TV, Netflix in your room, then it's avoidance. You're kind of avoiding that to like protect your sleep, which is never good, as we have seen. So for that reason and for many others, I think it's totally fine to watch TV, Netflix in your room or even in your bed, as long as you're not frustrated or annoyed. Meaning, if somebody is in bed and they're watching Netflix and they're completely like immersed in the show and they're enjoying it, that's totally fine. But if somebody is like in their bed and or in their room and they're watching a Netflix show that they think is kind of boring, but they're kind of hoping that they'll fall asleep because it's boring and they don't really like this show, that is not good. That's a sleep effort because you're actually trying to produce sleep. So as long as whatever you're doing in your bed, whatever you're doing in your bedroom, as long as you're enjoying that, it's fine. And then a lot of people will be like, well, what if I get really into this Netflix show and it's been like 4 hours and I forgot what time it is, and I really I don't think that's a problem at all. I think that's good. I mean, that was 4 hours you spent like not thinking about sleep. Amazing. But you have to respect your wake up time. Like, if you decided you're gonna be up at 6 a.m. and you happen to watch Netflix until 4 a.m., well, guess what? You have to get up at 6 a.m. and you slept very little that night, true, but you didn't worry about sleep, you didn't think about sleep, which is fantastic. And you know, having slept only 2 hours, the next night you're much more likely to sleep well. And you know, that next night, then you're like, okay, here's interesting. So in this scenario, let's say the next night you decide, I'm not gonna watch Netflix, and then you fall asleep, then you may think, oh, it's because I didn't watch Netflix, I fell asleep, and then increase all these unhealthy beliefs. Well, if you just keep doing what you're doing, well, like, okay, you watch Netflix and you happen to be up till 4 a.m., you get up at 6 a.m., well, you do the same thing next night, you go to bed and you watch Netflix, guess what? You're not going to be able to watch Netflix for 4 hours again. At least, you know, if you're immersed in that show and you like it, guess what? You're going to fall asleep. That is my belief. Jay, everyone else that has commented, sent questions, thank you so much. I am reading a lot more about this metacognitive therapy, which is really, I'm learning a lot. And I'm going to share all of it with you. In fact, you know what? I just decided I'm going to do what I'm thinking about. This week is going to be Meta Week. I'm going to talk, I'm going to make 3 episodes that are related to metacognitive therapy. And then we're going to go from there. So that said, any questions, comments, please keep them coming. Love it. I hope to have you back real soon. Until then, stay out of trouble. Bye.